This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Right now, it's time for the Education Spotlight. We do this every Friday morning with District 61, and we bring teachers and educators and personnel and kids. We had the FFA kids in this morning. I'm really wondering what that thing looks like tomorrow morning. That's going to be a really cold color run.
Oh, yeah. It's going to stick to you and then be runny.
Yes. St. Patrick's Day Parade. That was a smart move. They moved it from Saturday to Sunday at noon. And trust me, you wake up Saturday morning, you're going to be much more comfortable Sunday at noon watching all the parade floats go by. But our great pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Jay Marino, who is live with us this morning. The new assistant superintendent of support services, technology, and data research. Can you fit all that on a business card?
Yeah, you forgot student services as well. So,
Okay. Denise gave me your title, so let me write that in. Maybe she couldn't fit it all in. That seems like an all-encompassing sort of role. That's a lot.
Also, by the way, those tire tracks out there, I came in a few minutes early and did it.
Did you do some donuts? So okay.
I wanted to make a good impression here this morning.
We're happy to have you with us here today. All right. So you've been for about a year. You joined in December of 2020, and you were the director of research, data, and accountability, according to Denise. You're from Iowa originally. How did you end up here in Decatur?
Well, born and raised in Iowa, as you said, and I've had the opportunity to work in Arizona and Michigan. Illinois was assistant superintendent, Rock Island Schools, and then superintendent for some time in Dunlap, which is in the Peoria area, and superintendent Antioch Schools, and wanted to return to my passion, and that's really boots on the ground with teachers. With parents, with students, and that brought me back into central office, data and accountability person, and then as there was an opportunity for assistant superintendent, I joined that team, Dr. Clark and team, as assistant superintendent. So I do bring experiences from the classroom as a building administrator, central office, and now very much looking forward to a new role here in Decatur.
All right, let's talk about the technology part of your job. I remember being loved my time serving on the Decatur Public Schools Foundation, but it would drive me crazy, and this was a number of years ago, when we were spending $175 for a textbook when the technology was available where you could hand out an iPad to kids and not only be more intuitive in their learning, but be way more affordable. And thankfully, we've turned the corner on some of that. But do you feel like public education is where it needs to be technology-wise?
Well, I think
compared to the average American life,
I've been impressed with what Decatur offers its students and staff when it comes to devices, technology, infrastructure, network. You may or may not know that the district is part of a fiber ring within the city of Decatur, partners with the other municipalities in order to deliver high-speed broadband to all of our schools, which then allows us to do an awful lot with our virtual learning, our digital curriculum materials, and all that offers. So we're never quite satisfied with where we are with technology. It's ever changing. So our job is to try and keep an eye on the future and say, where do we want to be? Where do our students need to be? And what resources and experiences can we provide for them throughout their educational careers here in Decatur?
And it's hard to turn a big ship on a dime. And, District 61 is a big ship. You got almost 9,000 students and faculty and staff. And it's not probably ever going to stack up to the way we run a household. But sometimes that bureaucracy is a tough thing to fight, right?
Yeah, I think any larger school system has a lot of similar challenges. One of the things that we're focusing on is how do we get back to the basics of what's in the best interest of students, and all of the decisions that we have been making and are continuing to make looking forward is, an answer to that question: what's in the best interest of our students? And so that does require us to think out of the box. It does require us to assess status quo and ask the question, what would we do differently if we could to provide even better experiences?
Is that really? Is that really the first premise on behalf of all? I mean, because you got a lot of moving parts, right? I mean, you got five different unions you work with. You've got administrators, you got building administrators, you got teachers, you got teachers' assistants, you got custodians. Do you really believe in public education today that everybody's first mission is what's best for the kids?
You know, it's hard to make a generalization and make assumptions about everybody else, but it's one of the things that's kept me and many of my colleagues in education, and that is we're here for the kids. And so although it may sound a bit ideological, the notion, you know, still remains that every day has to be about what are we doing today for kids and what impact does that have?
All right, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the research, the data, and the accountability portion of your responsibilities. There's this fine line. I remember we were in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago, and I got a chance to meet the person who was heading up sort of education for the country under I think it was then President Bush. And this was the whole No Child Left Behind conversation. And he said something to me that you can agree or disagree with. But there has to be some level of accountability. You know, parents want this, you know, the kids need this. And then all of a sudden that becomes sort of teaching to the test. And how do you balance all that? I mean, how do you expect accountability, have expectation levels, and then not have it become just about teaching to whatever it is, whatever testing method you're using to get that accountability level? How do you balance that?
Well, that's really a challenge. In education, you do have those external pressures for results. You've got the public awareness of, you know, how your schools are doing. And one of the balancing acts of all of this is not to get into the trap of what do we have to do to get kids to score better on a test, but rather what do we have to do to get kids better prepared for life, better prepared for their educational career and beyond. So as the former data person in the district, you know, one of my jobs was to make sure that our teachers and administrators had the tools readily available for decisions that they were making. So a lot of my responsibility is maintaining our data warehouse, the main word, and the integration of multiple data systems in order to give the optics and metrics that our educators need in order to make the best decisions for kids.
And then I'm assuming, I'll use that word purposely, that all the teachers you have, there's all different levels of comfort with even the data.
Absolutely. And beyond just the notion of looking at data, you got to have a culture, and a culture that supports willingness to look at results and acknowledge that there are opportunities for improvement. So more so than the numbers is really creating that culture where we become comfortable bringing our results to the table and having professional conversations with each other about what do your results look like and what can I learn from what you're doing and what can I share from that may also help you.
All right. How far down do you go in the data? I mean, do you look at it as a whole? I mean, is District 61 just a big pile of data? Do you look at it by schools? I mean, how deep in the weeds does the data go or District 61?
Sure. We always start with what we call the 30,000-foot view.
Yeah.
What do results look like on high-stakes state tests, SAT, IAR? And then we start looking inward and say, okay, we know how we're doing as a district. Let's break it down by school. And from there, we break it down by content area, by grade level. And then we do what's called the drill down and drill through, the ability to go right into a classroom and start looking at individual student progress. So depending on who the user is, depends on what level of data they're looking at. Often teachers aren't focusing on, well, how is the district doing? They're most focused on how are my students doing and what impact am I having with my class?
All right, so I'm assuming you're looking at this data that you can physically see where you've got problems, right? I mean, I just once again, going back to my time on the foundation, you know, we had grant applications that would come in from teachers in classrooms, you know, wanting to fund this, fund that. And it was a great thing. But if you looked at the map of District 61, there were some schools that looked like North Korea, just like no lights. We never heard from them. Nobody ever thing. And some schools would constantly, you know, be applying teachers. You know, I'm assuming you have a digital District 61 where you can see those dark spots.
Yeah, absolutely. We call them heat maps in the data world.
Okay.
That gives us a visual.
I use the North Korea because I just remember the Donald Rumsfeld thing where there were no lights on when the satellite passed overhead at night. But yes, heat maps.
One of the things that we're most excited about right now is our data warehouse initiative, and that is taking any and all data sets that are important and bringing them into one single source, single login, where all of our team can go in, access them, and then have the ability to look at multiple data sets without logging in and out of multiple systems. So that's really kind of our latest with how do we get those tech tools in front of our educators in a very easy way so that they can make positive impacts on a daily basis.
And what are the important data sets? Give me some examples.
Sure. You know, we're looking at student achievement data that comes from multiple assessments. We're focusing in on language arts and math, of course. But beyond that, we look at social, emotional, behavioral well-being of our students. We have multiple probes that we use as metrics to get a gauge on how students are doing social and emotionally in our district. We also look beyond.
How do you gauge that, by the way? You're talking about the sort of the raw in numbers and looking at right. the stats. How does that happen?
Right. Well, some of that data is subjective, but what we do is we give students an opportunity to provide their perception on how they're doing. And so we're asking questions like, I enjoy coming to school. I feel safe at school. There are opportunities for me to, extend my learning. Whatever those questions are, we have opportunities where students self-assess and then teachers also provide a rating. And what we're doing is looking for those items that pop up in our data that say, wow, I never saw this in this child, but they're self-reporting that there are some issues here. So it gives us some insight into their thinking. And at the same time, we're rating kids and seeing a vast discrepancy from what teachers observing and what students are observing. So those are all the different kinds of data that we're looking at to try and put the whole picture together.
All right, the last 2 years, pandemic being an accelerator that has, you know, changed things forever. I know there's a chunk of the population that thinks we're going to go back to where we were. There are some things that are not ever going back to where they were. What did you learn in this 2 years time span about virtual learning, about, you know, being able to learn from home, about the technology? You know, what has changed forever during this pandemic?
I think there are a lot of lessons learned that we would best focus on and take away from this experience, and that is there's a whole powerful aspect to education that we can utilize through virtual learning. Even when it's not required, we're finding teachers are finding opportunities to say, hey, we had to do that during the pandemic, but now we want to do it because of what it allows us to do. And here's one small example. When we do parent-teacher conferences, which are happening as we mm-hmm. speak, we have teacher or parents who simply can't make it into the school or choose not to. But if you give them a virtual option that they can access from their phone and then interact with the teacher, we're we're finding that we're filling some gaps using that virtual method.
All right. So what are your plans? Recently moved into this new role, but what do you want to do? What do you want to do in the next couple of years?
What I would like to do is really engage our teams in the process of getting our focus back. And I think that's one thing that most organizations suffered through COVID is focus. Often the conversation, hey, how are things going? Oh, this e-learning or behaviors I'm seeing from kids who haven't been in a school in a year and a half. We want to get past all of that and not ask the question, well, how are we dealing with the pandemic, but rather what's our path forward look like? What do we learn from that? And what pivots do we need to make moving forward as a result of coming through this pandemic? So really, we want to stay forward focused. We want to get back to what we're here to do and really try to all acknowledge that we've been through some rough patches. We know that. COVID has taken its toll on many organizations, and especially in our schools, that really has that social, emotional, behavioral impact on students. So What we want to do is make sure we have supports in place, but we aren't using the pandemic as a crutch, but rather moving forward. So what does that look like?
I appreciate it. Dr. Jay Marino, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on your new position.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.